Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Hey guys, welcome back to Breaking Banks this week. It's our seventh anniversary edition, and we have all the gang here. We have with us Dave Birch, a longtime co-host and the author of the new book that you've got me at, The Currency Cold War, Cash and Cryptography, Hash Rates and Hegemony. Is that right?
That's clever, right?
Yeah, that's very clever. That's cash rates and hegemony.
Yeah, yeah. Joining us also is Miss Metaverse, Katie Schultz.
Oh, hey. Hey,
thanks for coming back on the show. And, of course, our special guest this week is John McAfee. John, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Well, thanks for having me, Brett. I'm happy to be here. Since I saw everybody's science fiction background, I know I'm going to be at home here.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good. So, first of all, how are you coping with the whole coronavirus thing, John?
Poorly. Very poorly. I'm agitated. I'm agitated with the sheep who are just blindly following the fear tactics of the media and the confusion of world governments who, if this is not a knee-jerk reaction to a problem, then I don't know what is. I mean, yeah. Within a matter of days, America went from, things are kind of okay, to a Congress passing a $2 trillion, I don't know what they're calling it, bailout here. So what is it? It's anyway, $2.2 trillion of money that they've sort of pulled out of thin air and shut down, half of the world economy. Literally shut it down for almost 2 months in some places. The ripple effects from this are going to be felt for years. And I think in some industries, airlines, good Lord, these people got to pay. They have to pay, I mean, billions in leases, whether they carry passengers or not.
Yeah.
Landlords, I mean, listen, communism is sort of creeping in California, where towns and counties are passing laws, emergency laws, that we're going to repeal them in 6 months. I don't think so. Saying that renters just don't have to pay rent. And see, people think that landlords are these great corporations that own, massive towers of apartments. No, most of them are people have full-time jobs, and they happen to save their money, get a mortgage, and buy a second house, which they rent out, or a third, where they have a small apartment complex of three or four units, or even a duplex. These people, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
I mean, you think the bank's going to go, listen, I can't pay this month, bank. Don't worry about it. I probably won't for 6 months because my rent is. No. The bank's going to say, well, my heart goes out to you.
But we're going to foreclose.
I'm sorry.
We're going to foreclose anyway.
Yeah, but we really feel for you, and you can come visit the place whenever you want. No, I mean, it's this is going to be, seriously, I'm 74 years old. I have never seen anything remotely as frightening as what's happening today.
Yeah.
And when I say frightening, I don't mean frightened by the virus. It doesn't scare me in the least. But no, it's frightening.
Yeah, no, it's unprecedented. And what's ironic is that the market had, yesterday, very good numbers. I know we're pre-recording this. And so here you go, you've got this disconnect, between an economy that is in tatters, falling apart, and the stock market's going, yep, we're okay. No worries, man.
You know what? Prior to the stock market crash in 1929, I mean, there was a bull run. Amazing proportions. I mean, people, I have no explanation for how the emotional and psychological factors that rule the market are. That's not my specialty, but it's it's not right.
There is a point here where, and cryptocurrency comes into this. We're definitely going to get into that. But there has been massive inequality, That's been clear, particularly in economies like the United States. You've got this disparity. And right now, of course, you know, as you pointed out, you know, people who have money are still making money. There's reports that the wealth of billionaires has gone up during this crisis, not down.
The wealth of what?
The wealth of billionaires has gone up during this crisis.
Yeah, but then how many of the world is a billionaire?
Right, exactly. And so, you know, do you think there's a, you know, we bandy around this term socialism, but is part of this sort of a social awakening of humanity that we need to care for ourselves better as a species, we need to care for the earth, or is it just more division?
I think we care for ourselves as a species, like all species do, which is educating the young. Part of that education, I think, should be you are pretty much on your own in this world. If you're going to be honest, I mean, truly honest with your children, like my father and grandfather were, you're going to sit them down and say, you'll have to learn some very hard lessons. Number one, you can trust no one, not your wife, not your kids, not your mother. History has proven in Rome. Who whacked? Oh, the emperors. It's either your wife, your mother, your brother, or your son. So please, we know you cannot trust anyone except yourself. But if you're going to trust yourself, you then have to take responsibility for every one of your decisions, which is something that, you know, we don't teach our children anymore. So I don't think we help society by giving people a loaf of bread or letting them not pay their rent for 6 months. I think we help society by instilling the values that created this great society, not just America, but the world. I mean, where we have conquered fire, the oceans, storms, the air, the atom, and yet we ourselves remain unconquered by ourselves. So we're all just a bunch of children that, you know, wandering around and going, well, you know, I don't have to worry much because my fellow man will help me. Well, if you count on that, people who have experienced true tragedies, like at the end of wars, Germany, the end of World War, where literally they had 10 billion mark notes printed. I mean, 10 billion mark notes. And in the end, you couldn't buy a loaf of bread, but
like Zimbabwe.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And do you think it can't happen in America or Europe? Oh, please, people, wake up. See, that's the other thing. We all think we're immune. It won't happen to me. The teenager, when I'm in love, I'm 16, I want to get married. You go, well, listen, you're 16, and the chances of this lasting for a year is about 1 in 100,000. And you go, no, I'm special. Not me, I know. Well, no, you're not. Nobody's special. No one's immune.
Yeah.
The laws of human behavior and human interaction, our desires and fears, they're universal, people. I'm sorry, people are not special. And yet we think we are. Well, we're in America. It ain't going to happen. We're the most powerful country in the world.
Anymore.
Okay. I'm sorry, I'm taking the stage.
No, it's fine. That's why you're here.
It's like George Carlin. They call it the American dream because you got to be asleep to believe in it.
That's a beautiful thing. That is, in fact, the case. You know, I would take another line from The Watchmen, whoever the comedian was. The comedian.
Okay? Yeah, the comedian.
The comedian, okay. Where he goes, whatever happened to the American dream? And he goes, this is it.
Yeah.
And this is, people are going to, I think, wake up to a harsh reality in 6 months and go, is this what we had intended? I think not.
Yeah. There's a perception that this is obviously affecting poor, and in the United States, there's some evidence to suggest that, you know, particularly in the southern states, that African Americans have been hit harder by coronavirus. But of course, the lack of universal health care in the U.S. adds to that pain. So whichever way you look at this, the lower to middle income households in the U.S. are really going to be in a deep hole.
When you say getting hit hard by coronavirus, are you meaning the infection or
economically?
The response?
Well, but both. Yeah, okay. Both, yeah.
Well, no, listen, because you don't want to talk about infections. I mean, I spent a month digging into numbers. You are not going to like what I have to say, so let's not say that.
Okay.
Yes, the economic impact, of course. Thank God. Who suffers
in
every economic collapse first?
Yeah.
I mean, this is the rule of thumb, which has existed since we came out of caves 50,000 years ago.
Mm. The information is all over the place, too. There is an information war. At the same time, there's a culture war happening at the same time. It's people want to know what's happening, but the reality is the mainstream media says they just put a bunch of different narratives out there. And a lot of people just see what they, you know, what the headlines say at surface value. And when you connect all the dots and you look at the data and you think critically, it tells a totally different story.
Yes, so it does. See, that's our point. No, there's no clash at all. I mean, listen, if anybody is benefiting from this, it's the mainstream media. What's the value of any channel or anything? It's the number of eyeballs times the amount of time those eyeballs are glued to you. Prior to this lockdown, we spent 8 or 9 hours at work. We didn't watch much television during that time. We went out on weekends on dates or to the movies or to the park with our kids, or we just got drunk. Now what are we doing? 24 hours a day, we're stuck in front of this television. We're watching. I mean, their value, their net future value, because this is one of these habituated things, is it's gone up 10 times. Now, who is saying the fearful thing? The media. They go, oh, the numbers, horrible, staggering numbers. Well, let's look at the numbers. I mean, as of an hour ago, the number of world deaths, according to WHO and John Hopkins, was 234,000. That's almost a quarter of a million. That's a horrific number. No, please, God. I'm sorry. Is God allowed to be said? Yes, I think so. There are 7.8 billion people on this planet. Doctors have for hundreds of years described the mortality and the fierceness of the disease by the rate of how much of the population we're going to lose, right? Well, so we've lost a quarter of a million out of 7.8 billion. And so we've lost one person in 50,000. And you understand?
It's an interesting, sorry to cut in, it's an interesting, I mean, none of us are epidemiologists, but we can all read the numbers. At a very gross level, so for example, in the UK, we've lost, I think, heading towards 30,000 people. Excess mortality.
Out of 112 million population, my friend.
So the excess mortality figures will probably be in the region of 50,000 by the time we get it, you know, reasonably under control. But I can see why people are beginning to be a little frustrated, because the median voter is not going to die from it. So in other words, the way the statistics work, broadly speaking, is if you catch the virus, your chance of dying from it is approximately the same. I mean, within statistical bounds, approximately the same as your chance of dying within the next year anyway. So it's like for somebody like me, my chance of dying in the next year, I don't know, let's say it's 1%. So if I catch the virus, my chance of dying is 1%. It's just I'm going to die in the next 2 weeks, not across the next year. Yeah, so what that means is for most people that get it are not going to die from it. So we have to have an intelligent trade-off between the excess mortality figures that are going to come from this and the kind of economic impact. And this is where I think some people feel a little angry, because I kind of feel, from a reasonably intelligent perspective, for most companies, most organizations, most people that did proper risk analysis, some form of pandemic has been the number one item in the risk register for global companies for probably the last decade. I mean, it's not like nobody knew this was going to happen. It's not like some black swan. I mean, people had it in their risk registers, but the planning was, I don't know what
the planning sort of went out the window though, right?
Well, it did in some places. There's a great difference between countries that suffered from SARS and MERS,
right,
and took their risk management seriously and their pandemic planning seriously, and countries that didn't. So if you look at what's happened in places like Korea, it's under control.
Taiwan, Hong Kong, yeah.
Right? Because they know what to do when this sort of thing happens. You put the face mask on, you start the testing.
Yeah, give us a counter-argument, John.
Let me give you a counter-argument. I think the greatest one is Japan, one of the most densely packed countries in the world, and Tokyo, the world's largest city, where they did not lock down anything, nothing. Yeah, they declared a state of emergency. Why? International pressure. Did they do anything? No. not a single law was changed. People are going about their business, and there are still images of people being shoved, literally shoved, into subways, which is what they do to get all the people in there. Do you know what Tokyo's total deaths has been? And they were one of the first infected. 93 people. Look it up. New York, which has only 8 million population, has 14,000. Now, I'm a statistician, and you say I'm not an epidemiologist, but I tell you the reason that I won the virus war with the antivirus software, and I had 86% of the world market before I left the company, was that I understood how computer viruses were transmitted, what the impediments of transmission were, what the speed of transmission, and how deadly were they? In other words, how much damage are they going to do? The reason that we won is because we were getting 50 viruses, new viruses every day. Nobody could keep up with them. So I'd have the first thing I'd have my team do is says, you tell me how fast this is spread, mark the damage. And the ones that spread slow and did no damage, we ignored totally. The ones that spread slow and did a small amount of damage, depending on whatever else we had to do then. The ones that spread fast and did a lot of damage, which were very few of them, were the ones that we worked on, and we abandoned the rest. So statistically, if you analyzed our product against Norton, Microsoft, we were the number one product, because in testing in live environments, we beat the crap out of everybody else. So I do know a little bit about the mathematics of spreading, yeah. I promise you.
So obviously, I mean, a lot of people, I think with good reason, say that, well, the slow spread in Japan, actually Japan doesn't test as much as other places, so, but has a lot to do with kind of social practices, because a lot of people, right. As soon as they read about...
They were wearing masks, a new virus, they listened to...
Yeah, they put the masks on.
I'm sorry to laugh. Like I'm really sorry to laugh. Please, go online and look at the videos of people cramming into subways, half with no masks. Yeah. You're in physical contact, face-to-face. Look, this is not just people, a virus that can be transmitted through the air. I mean, you can transmit it through touch. You can touch something for 4 days, depending upon on cardboard, it'll last for 60 hours. On a smooth counter, as much as 4 days. You can touch it, touch your face, and you're infected. So please, I'm not buying that. And the reason I'm not buying it is because there's something funny about the numbers. New York City, 14,000. Do you understand? Per population, New York City has 250 times as many deaths, and that's part of the statistics. Now, if you look at it, the United States is incentivizing people diagnosing the coronavirus. Why? You get $39,000. $39,000 every time you write on a piece of paper. Then is it pneumonia? Is it the flu? Because there are tons of lower respiratory tract infections out there. And I go, well, let's see, I don't know. But if I do put down coronavirus, I get $39,000. Now, you might say nobody would do anything that corrupt or, you know. No, I'm sorry, I don't.
They kick dying people out of emergency rooms, so, yeah.
It's coming from the top down, though.
Who do you get the $39,000 from? That sounds great. Who did get the $39,000?
No, it's
from?
A federal initiative.
The federal government.
Yeah.
I read the government 12, gives you per
it's patient. part of this $2 trillion bailout package. We're going to help doctors and hospitals. You've got a serious pandemic here, which we don't, people, but you've got a serious pandemic here. We're going to give $39,000 to every hospital to help them cope with this, only for coronavirus patients. For everybody else, you get jack. You don't get anything. I was about to say jackass. You don't get anything.
But hospital income has roughly halved over the last month, hasn't it? I mean, they'd have to give them a lot more than $39,000.
Okay, you can believe as you wish, but please look at the numbers. So New York had 14,000 deaths from coronavirus. Okay, so that's 39,000 plus 14,000, 13,000 for the original diagnosis. So it's really $53,000 for every person that dies from coronavirus. So you take... Let's take $50,000 and multiply it times 14,000. That's a lot of money. Now, that's just for the dying. If you diagnose someone and they don't die, well, you don't get the extra. Okay? They just get to pocket $39,000. So if you want to believe, by the way, and these numbers, people, that are reported by hospitals and other things, you know for a fact you got an account, you're not going to know. I mean, if you know anything about accounting, you're not going to know until the end of the month or after you've run all the numbers. And but it's garbage when they say hospitals are losing money. How can they be if they're overflowed and they're getting 50 times as much money as long as they diagnose coronavirus and everybody's dying from coronavirus?
That's what I'm curious about, because a friend of mine was saying the hospital where his friend works, they've been cutting the doctor's salaries and cutting back their hours.
So yes, I'm thinking those hospitals, yes, absolutely. Because in America, it's a media charade. They will jam one hospital and the people are waiting and dying, but the other 50 are empty, of course.
We've seen that in New York, because we sit on the FDR and we've seen these ambulances going north all the time.
Yeah. Every single city in the world that's locked down has something like that. It's either a political agenda where you're trying to discredit the opposition in some way, shape, or form, or it's economic, like in America. But let me tell you, listen to this, people. The six most heavily locked down countries in the world, let me name them for you, England, the United States, Italy, Spain, France, and Germany account for 7% of the population. Run these numbers if you don't. But 71% of the world's deaths. Whereas in countries that are locked down, including Sweden, and by the way, people point to Sweden, well, Sweden's not locked down. Good God, they have 2,200 deaths. Oh, well, they also got a population of 10 million people. And Sweden is as far north as you can get, almost. Finland's a little further in Europe. And the coronavirus is like the flu. It loves cold weather, dies in the summer. So every year, Sweden has 10 times the flu deaths of anybody, as does Tierra del Fuego in the Southern Hemisphere. So, no, you can't use that as an example. But if you add up the countries that have not locked down and their populations, you find that the...
What's your feeling? What do you
think? You've got 100 times the death rate.
The numbers don't
correlate. That have locked down.
Like you say, you've got to wait till the end of the year to do the accounting. But in your...
Not the end of the year. No. You've got to wait for a couple of months. No, I'm saying no. To find out what happened in hospitals, you're going to have to wait a couple of months.
Yeah, but the point is, you're pretty forward-looking. You're pretty kind of futuristic. So what's your kind of rough feeling? What's the excess mortality going to look like? Is it a 50,000 or is it going to be 500,000?
For the US. 500,000. If it's 500 in the U.S.?
Yeah.
No, it's not going to be 500,000. Let me tell you, by May 24th, this is going to be gone. It's a seasonal virus like the flu. And already, please, I look at the statistics every hour. Why? Because I am going to refute the garbage that the mainstream media is spewing and the propaganda that governments are using to enrich their pockets and increase their power. So, yes, I know. Tell me. Ask me any country in the world, I'll tell you their population and the number of deaths as of 2 o'clock today. So no, some people.
So John,
someone from outside the U.S., I'm genuinely curious. So why is the U.S. administration so kind of enthusiastic about the lockdown? Then wouldn't they be more negative about it?
No,
please.
Politics.
It's politics and power. Yeah. Power. It's all about power. They already have more power than they need. Nonsense. You never have too much power, like you never have too much money. No, please, people. It's a matter of the media scares you, and you go, wait a minute. The government goes, wait a minute. The population is getting scared. And when the sheep get scared, what do? They look for a savior. And the savior is the government. And they say, we will save you. Lock yourselves down. And they go, how about that? And since they're locked down, because in America, do you know what laws have been passed in the past month?
Number one. Yeah, we've been discussing
FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, is no longer required to have a court order to arrest you. Neither do they have to charge you. Neither do they have a time limit on how long they can keep you. They can keep you for the rest of your life without a court order, without a charge. Why? It's an emergency. Now, the law says only in a state of emergency. Now, who chooses the state of emergency? Yeah. Think about it. So that's one thing. Renters don't have to pay rent. No, we have instituted draconian measures in America and Italy and Spain. And it will come to England, I promise you. Why? Because England will catch on and go, whoa, look what they've done in Latin America. They've gained power over the populace, something that all dictators and leaders have longed for since the invention of language.
So, all right, guys,
I hate to be so grating, but I promise you, Janice will tell you, I have immersed 18 hours a day for 45 days.
And the
numbers, and you cannot possibly tell me a country or ask me a question I cannot give you the numbers for. And I can even tell you what the probability of those numbers being correct are based on any number of factors. So people, I invented antivirus software.
Yes.
Nobody knows the mathematics of epidemiology more than me. And I'm telling you people, this is a
scam. Very compelling. It's very compelling. Let's just take a quick break, guys. You're listening to Breaking Banks. We're going to have a few words from our sponsors and we'll be right back after this break. Jack Henry is a great supporter of Breaking Banks. Jack Henry Digital is the pioneer and creator of personal digital banking that helps community financial institutions translate their trust and live local personal service meaningfully into digital channels. Jack Henry Digital also helps community financial institutions strategically differentiate their digital offerings from those of the mega banks and the big tech and fintechs. How do they do it? Well, it's with their Banno digital platform, a complete 100% API-enabled open digital banking platform. You get lightning-fast native apps, integrated PFM. You get cloud-based core-connected back-office tools for employees. And with the website marketing and content management capabilities built into their community, you can launch, track, and target campaigns quickly from click-through to product acquisition. Don't forget to also check out Banno Conversations, a first-of-its-kind, fully authenticated, secure chat capability that enables branch staff to connect digitally with customers. You want to check it out? You really have to see this in action. Visit banno.com to schedule a demo today. That's banno.com. And a new sponsor that's come in and joined us this week is Shippo. For e-commerce business, if you're working in the e-com space, shipping in 2 days or less is the new standard as a growing business. How can you keep up? Well, this is where Shippo comes into play. Now, Shippo is the only shipping software for growing businesses that you can set up in minutes starting today. They ship hundreds of millions of packages. They offer volume discounts up to 90% off the typical carrier rates. And they do this by doing bulk ordering with carriers like UPS, USPS, FedEx, and DHL. Your orders are automatically pulled in from your system and into Shippo. They have automated return labels that are free. You only pay if your customers use them. And companies that use Shippo are already saving thousands of dollars. And on average, you can grow 70% a year over year with your shipping capabilities with their platform. Over 100,000 companies are using the service. For our listeners, they're offering their best discount available anywhere. Get a shipping consultation and Shippo Pro Plan 6-month trial for free at goshippo.com/fintech. That's up to $700 worth of value for free at goshippo.com/fintech. That's goshippo.com/fintech. Go right now, get your free shipping consultation and Pro Plan 6-month trial.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
being stuck at home right now, you're probably not thinking a lot about internet privacy because you're on your home network. And, you know, let's face it, a lot of people don't think enough about it when they're on the Starbucks or the McDonald's network, right? You know, you think you're at home, hey, if there's something I don't want to be tracked, I'm going to throw on incognito mode and boom, I'm invisible. Well, truth is, incognito mode might keep a little bit of the activity from hitting your browser, but you can actually still be traced. And even if you clear your browsing history, your ISP, that is your internet service provider, sees every single site you visited and where someone outside of your house, and let's face it, hackers are also full of free time right now, are able to get into your network, or maybe they've been able to plant something on the network already to view your traffic. And so that's why when I'm at home, I never go online without using ExpressVPN. Now, ExpressVPN makes sure that your internet service provider can't see the sites you visited. Instead, your internet connection is rerouted through ExpressVPN secure servers. ExpressVPN server has its own IP address that's shared among thousands of users. That means everything you do is anonymized and can't be traced back to you. It also encrypts 100% of your data, and this is the part that I value the most. It's best-in-class encryption, so your information is always protected, even if that means you're surfing from the couch and it's only going to that wireless router. You never know who is sniffing around outside. ExpressVPN has you covered on every device. Simple tap one button and you're protected, whether that's a computer, a tablet, or a smartphone. It is the fastest and most trusted VPN on the market, and it is number one rated by CNET, Wired, The Verge, and countless more. So protect your online activity today with the VPN that I trust for my security, for everything we do in and around the banking world. Use expressvpn.com/fintech and you can get an extra 3 months free on a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/fintech to learn more and get 3 extra months free.
And we're back from the break. You're listening to Breaking Banks. We're going out to 178 countries, the number one fintech radio show and podcast in the world. We've got Dave Birch and Miss Metaverse joining us as co-hosts. And our special guest for our 7th anniversary edition of Breaking Banks is John McAfee. Now, John, we were talking during the break about the, you know, Will Durant's lessons from history, the model. You know, he talked about the fact that 90% of human history, more than 90% of human history, has been essentially a feudal system, you know, with the rich at the top of the pyramid running the economies of the world to better themselves. And then the most successful economies in history, you know, the Chinese economy of today, the US economy post-Second World War, were more diamond-shaped, where the middle class was very robust, a lot of consumption occurring, and economic growth. But those models seem to be fairly unstable because, you know, the guys at the top, the 1%, are always trying to game the system. How's this going to affect us over the next 40 to 50 years, you think, in terms of economic development and, you know, the potential for economic slavery here as a result of massive debt that will incur during this process?
I'm the wrong man to ask. I'm 74, okay? I'm standing on the far edge of life, looking into the darkness, folks, and right over the horizon is my exit door. So I don't really give much thought to what's going to happen beyond maybe the next few years, and I will be lucky to survive that. So I cannot help you with 50 years out.
Okay.
I hope, I think I can help you with the next few years. As I said during break, that this is a first in the history of the world where we have just shut down and done nothing. We have produced nothing. We have serviced nothing. We have created nothing, and we are a human species that have developed for 50,000 years through a series of changing societies and government structures and economies to evolve to a point where our global society runs pretty smoothly. Now, you may say, well, God, people starving in Africa. Well, yeah, 12.5 million a year percentage of population.
And that's been coming down for 30 years, yeah.
I wouldn't say we created it. It went up last year.
Okay. Anyway.
It's a little harsh to say we created nothing, John. I did some pretty good PowerPoint today. I can get it up on the screen and show it to you.
No, I didn't say we created nothing. I said we created this society. And this society is enormous and astonishing, but it is very, very fragile people.
The system broke down. The system collapsed. You know, it only took 21 days.
Well, it hasn't collapsed yet, but I think it will within a few months.
If we can't change now,
people are still getting food. People are still watching TV. There's still electricity coming into your houses. Yeah. No, nothing's collapsed, my friend. But no one has experienced this. An economist, sociologist, they're guessing blind.
Yeah,
because there is no
precedent
that we can gather from. But I do know this, shutting down the world like we have done for 1 month is going to have the most drastic economic and social impacts. And you say those at the top, I don't think in 6 months is going to be a top. And we may not even be able to locate the bottom. I think our social structure is going to become chaotic and unpredictable, and certainly our financial structure. There will be no financial structure in 6 months. There will be nothing but chaos there. So what are we going to do? You know, is it every man for himself? I don't think so. It's maybe not that bad, but if we do not stop this madness now, then it will be. I'm sorry. I've lived for 74 years. I've seen more than most people. And I promise you, from my perspective of my advanced age, nobody is going to know what's going to happen. But I promise you, it is going to be horrific and extreme.
Okay.
And far, far worse than if we had not locked down, or far worse than if 100 million people had died from coronavirus. This lockdown is far worse. Because we're looking at 12 million starving. It's 12.8 million last year. Look it up. I know numbers.
And the jobs won't come back that quickly.
And the jobs will not come back. And the deaths. I mean, people know. I mean, people are going, 250,000 have died from coronavirus. Do you know how many people die from diarrhea every year? Pathogenic diarrhea passed by viruses. 3 million people. So now that 3 million, because of unsanitary conditions and lack of food, is going to go to 30, and the 12 million is going to go to 500 million people. You know this. Yeah. If we do not stop this madness today, another 2 weeks, and I think, yeah, I'm giving it up. You might as well buy guns and food. That's all I can advise you for economic advice.
I do have my Elon Musk certified flamethrower on the shelf
Really?
Near the door. Yes.
No way.
I have a Boring Company flamethrower near the door, yes, just in case.
Well, listen, I tell you what. Now, flamethrowers, I've never used a flamethrower. I mean, what's the distance on that?
It doesn't have any fuel in it. I can't
tell. It just needs a little propane tank.
That's kind of like having a gun locked up in a cabinet in your house. Yeah. So that when the thief breaks in and they've got the gun
they didn't
to
know
your
it's
head,
not
you
loaded.
Say, wait a minute, give me a second, I've got to get my gun off.
I'm going to get a butane tank from Amazon.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, right? We're being told right now that in 6 months, there's going to be meat supply shortages. And what happens? Everyone's now run out, you know, this past week, buying up all the meat. When the meat was there, you know, you couldn't find toilet paper, couldn't get paper products, but now you can't get meat. Why? Because they're saying that people are at risk if they go into the meat plants, and it's a risk to them, and that we need to keep everyone safe and keep the meat plant workers home. So there you go, meat's gone till who knows. And it's going to keep going like this. They're saying this could last another 2 years. They're just making it up as they go along. I've seen a paper from the CDC. There's a paper, I believe, from the CDC that's being sent to these hospitals and picking up on, you know, what John was saying earlier in the show, that they're getting 12,000 per patient and 24,000 if they get on a ventilator. And then everyone needed ventilators.
I'm sorry, but where is this?
In New York.
Trust me, it's 39,000 if you're on a ventilator, 13,000 if it's just a diagnosis.
Yeah, and
I know these numbers. Trust me. Okay.
Yeah. maybe it was a week or two ago when I saw the numbers. You know, it changes. I feel like, you know, the data is changing by the day. But what they're saying is that it depends on whether A, they are diagnosed, which there was also a bunch of news coming out saying that the tests themselves, some were actually contaminated with the COVID virus, and B, if they are presumed to have the virus. So what does that mean, right? It's actually in the paperwork saying if they presume to have the symptoms, they have it. Yeah.
Could that explain why New York has 250 times the death rate of Tokyo and Iran? Yes. It took me an entire day. Iran, the 10 largest cities in the world, Tokyo, New Delhi, Mumbai, somebody in South America, Sao Paulo, the 10 largest cities, Dhaka, and two of them, in Delhi and Mumbai, and anyway, 10. I went on worldatlas.com, very easy, looked at the entire populations of each country, added them up. Then I went on WHO.int, which is the World Health Organization's statistical site, got the death rates per country. And then I went on John Hopkins, which is our most respected medical research institution in America. And I've cross-referenced all the numbers. They didn't vary more than 5%. So I thought, okay, good. Random numbers. New York has 200 times the death rate of the 10 largest cities on this planet.
Right, so you can't argue it's population density. It's something else, okay. Right?
Well, Japan is less dense than New York, please, yeah, God.
No, exactly.
No, these are the largest cities in the world. All of them are more dense than New York. See, everybody comes up and say, oh, but this. No. See, here's the problem. People go, all right, I know what I know. And so when a fact shows up that contradicts it, we reach instantly for something to contradict that fact. No, nothing can contradict it. Believe me, I've run everything through.
John, so how do we get out of it?
So let's get into crypto. How's this all going to affect? How's this all going to affect the cryptocurrency world?
See, that's a very complex question. I mean, people go, well, everybody's going to jump into crypto. No, why? Getting into crypto is not like opening a bank account. Okay. You've got to do some studying. You have to understand what it is. You've got 13,000 different coins. You've got political alliances on Bitcoin or piracy coins or what have you, distributed exchanges. So, no, people are not going to jump into it because it will take too long. And people are already into it while we're into it. And we've got all kinds of things happening. We've got the Bitcoin halving coming up sometime in this month. Can't predict it precisely. I suspect the 12th or 13th of this month. This is going to cause a massive rise in the value of Bitcoin and then a massive collapse. Now, why? I ran the 6th largest Bitcoin mining company in the world at MGT on the New York Stock Exchange. Had a market cap of $800 million for the company. We had 6,000 S9s running 24 hours a day, cranking up. So I know the economies of Bitcoin. I know that when this halving comes, first of all, it's going to be I never even looked at the price of Bitcoin. It's a garbage coin. No one in the world should be using it. It has no privacy. You can't put a smart contract on it. You can't even put a distributed application on that blockchain. Why? It was the first one or opened the door to a very fertile field in which we as technologists have planted some amazing fruitful things. But Bitcoin's not one of them. So no, I don't pay attention to it. But I promise you that if it hasn't happened already, there's going to be a huge rise in Bitcoin. I mean, a very steep thing and an instant drop the day after the halving. This is what always happens. I did the same thing with the quarter. I was the sixth largest miner in the world at the quarter. So I know the economies of Bitcoin. It's a garbage coin, and it's ridiculous that everybody else is going, whoa, it's great. No, it's not. Nobody uses it anymore. Nobody. Used to be I could buy stuff with Bitcoin. However, today you can't. Nobody accepts it. It's Monero. That's the only coin people used.
That right. I want to give you one more question here. Elon Musk has been going off his tree right now about this situation, but why haven't we seen Silicon Valley doing more proactively to sort of help us navigate through this?
Through the Bitcoin?
No, through the whole coronavirus thing.
Well, if you know Elon and I think exactly alike. I mean, we comment on each other's tweets. He commented on mine 3 days ago going, yes, absolutely. Why when I was saying this is the biggest bunch of garbage I have ever seen? And he went on and said, absolutely. He said, your tweets about this are on fire. The publications picked up. No, Elon. The reason is because Silicon Valley is too smart to believe that this is real, people.
Right.
I mean, these are heads of technological corporations. They can add and subtract and multiply and divide. That's all people need to understand that this is nonsense. If you can add, subtract, multiply, divide, and want to spend a few days pouring through the World Atlas, pouring through the WHO and John Hopkins data, and going to every single country's equivalent of the CDC, you will see that, oh, this is garbage. So Elon knows it's garbage. Every Silicon Valley knows it's garbage. So why should they be helping a non-problem? People, please, it drives me crazy that, I'm not talking about you, but the listeners out there, that people don't think anymore. You allow out of two things, laziness, number one, you're all lazy, and fear, number two. What's the fear? No, the fear is of making the wrong decision or thinking the wrong thought, which is the same thing. You're going, oh my God, if I make my own decisions, then what happens? Well, I'm responsible for results. If I make a wrong decision, bad things. If I follow somebody and they make a wrong decision, who gets blamed? Them, not me. Do you understand? This is why no one thinks anymore. When I grew up, my father and grandfather said, number one, trust no one, no one, and do not ever believe a statement or an idea from another human being. You work it out yourself, and you have the facilities to do it. You could all have done this, what I did, well, not to the extent, but within 3 hours of digging and just basic math, add, subtract, multiply, and divide, you could have noticed that, okay, this is not a real problem. Like Elon did, like I did, like every Silicon Valley, except they're not going to say it. Why? Extraordinarily unpopular. Elon doesn't care, and I certainly do not care.
Is the implication of what you're saying there, John, that you think that we're waiting for a kind of more sophisticated cryptocurrency to come along?
I thought we were talking about the coronavirus.
We were.
Let's get back to cryptocurrency.
He's trying to get us back to crypto.
Listen, I'm an old man. I'm confused enough as it is. I mean, just tricking around. So no, back to cryptocurrency. No, we have sophisticated cryptocurrencies. Monero is the most sophisticated. Well, the problem is we can't get that chain to work on a distributed exchange. Now, I built the first distributed exchange 4 months ago, the McAfee DEX. Now, it's in beta. And right now, all we can exchange are Bitcoin, Ethereum, all Ethereum tokens, Tron, and Binance. But on the Ethereum chain, we can exchange thousands of ERC-20 tokens all the way up to ERC-1440. So really, we can exchange thousands of coins. But we can't get Monero on a distributed exchange. That when they wrote Monero, when they built Monero, no one anticipated the need for distributed exchanges. Why do we need them? Because even though you have a privacy coin like Monero, if you're on a centralized exchange, you've got no privacy. While you're using it, absolutely, if you want to get out and get cash, too bad. Also, to even use it, you have to connect your wallet to your identification, and you have to give them your name, your address, and documents on a distributed exchange like ours. Nothing. There's no KYC. There's no anti-money laundering. We don't ask for a name, an email address, not even an IP address. You are completely anonymous. So through a distributed exchange, the anonymity of the exchange and the anonymity of the privacy coin make you invincible to governments, to spying, to hackers. No one will ever know what you're doing. With Bitcoin, if you give me your wallet and we exchange something forever after, I can look inside your wallet forever and see what comes in, what goes out, how much you have.
So one thing I don't quite get, so I can't remember the exact figures, but I think I saw something the other day saying, I can't remember, 3% of global GDP is money laundering or something like that. I don't remember. It was a big number.
Oh, it's more. It's probably 5%.
So therefore, you would imagine that these guys would be going nuts to use these privacy calls.
Yes, of course. Please,
can it doesn't seem to be happening. The volumes seem very low to me.
What are you talking about? Market volume, my friend. That's got nothing to do with the value of the coin. I'm talking about the use of the coin, using Monero to buy and sell goods. It is 90% of the market. Bitcoin is almost zero. Bitcoin has no value. Monero is the only coin with value. If you go on the dark web, try and buy anything with Bitcoin, they will laugh at you. Ethereum, they will laugh at you. 99% of all transactions are Monero. It is the biggest coin ever created. People, you're looking at what it's worth on the market. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. What they're wondering, what they're looking for, is what's it worth as currency? What can you buy with Bitcoin? Nothing.
Right.
It's worthless.
The value.
What can you buy with Monero? Everything. Do you understand? And that is the value. Now, I had a point, although I did forget it. We were talking about privacy coins, distributed exchanges. So now, the question is, do you want privacy or not? And more importantly, what about all the crooks who are going to be using it? Do you understand? If all the crooks are using it, that is the greatest authentication of the value. I mean, for example, when the telephone came out, who used it first for nationwide communication? The mob, so they could organize their criminal activities nationwide. When the automobile came out and they started building bigger and bigger engines in the 30s, when the first 8-cylinder came out, police were always 3 or 4 years behind. The gangs bought the fastest car. In the 30s, bank robberies increased by a factor of 10. Why? Because I could buy a fast car, rob the bank, thumb my nose up at the police, and peel out.
I'm just curious because you know more about the technology, John. So is Monero like an evolutionary step, or are we getting close to like the end point where it will stabilize that particular
thing? I think
technology?
Monero is the end point with one exception. Right. It cannot be used in a distributed exchange. But next month, I am releasing a coin called Ghost, which can, and it's equal to Monero in every privacy respect. But you can use it on a distributed exchange, which gives you true privacy.
What's the architecture?
I like the name, Ghost. Yeah.
He knows about marketing, Brett. You should get a few tips here.
Hey, guys, we got like 2 minutes left. I want to do this.
I want to know more about Ghost.
I'm respectful of John's time here. What is your plan over the next 60 days, and what should we be doing?
Well, my plan is to get Ghost out on our exchange. And by the end of June, our exchange will be out of beta and in production, and we'll have every coin in the world. And it will be exactly like Binance, only distributed. No one can ever shut it down. And the governments can never know anything about you. That's number one. Number two, if this lockdown does not end by the 21st of May, I'm going to go out and buy guns and food, because I promise you, if it hasn't ended, you better get guns and food, because whatever structure is supporting our society and our economic and governmental systems is going to collapse. And thank you for having me on.
And on that cheery note, John McAfee, thank you for joining Breaking Banks, Dave Birch. Thanks for joining us as co-host, and Katie, as always, Miss Metaverse, great to be on.
I can't believe it's been seven years, Brett. Thank you, John.
All the best, and thank you very much for your insights.
You're welcome. Thank you, my friends. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for this week. Thanks to our guests and to our sponsors who help make the show possible. You may have a little more time on your hands right now, so you can listen to all of our more than 300 shows, plus episodes from all of our other shows, including Breaking Banks Europe, Tech on Reg, the Finovate podcast, and more, all on Provoke.fm. I hope you like them, and if so, that you'll give all the shows 5 stars and share them with others. Stay home if you can, take care of your loved ones, and let's all work together to move this industry forward and to make it stronger than ever. That's it for this week. We'll see you again next week with more Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.